Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Across the years, I've had some terrific conversations on the air and off with Rabbi Irwin Kula, president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership. As even Mitt Romney said in his concession speech, it is essential that we now all come together for the common good. But that's much easier said than done. How do we do it? When I thought about that question, Rabbi Irwin Kula came to mind. I'm confident that he has some insightful thoughts on this. Irwin Kula joins us right now. Irwin, thanks for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Hi, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
What thoughts do you have on this starkly divided nation just a few days after a national election?
Well, I think the first reaction and the kind of common reaction is, you know, America is a great country. We have an election and democracy works. And I think the way Mitt Romney responded was, you know, the very best of how America responds. And many people voted. People waited online. I mean, you know, for hours and hours. So first is to say, you know, democracy does work. Mm-hmm. And I think that affirming that is very, very important. The next thing is that it's always important for winners and losers to understand that you never win as much as you think when you win. And so for winners, it's really, really important to be humble. Because as much as we won, or as much as those of us on the more liberal or progressive side won, the country's very, very split. And, you know, it was 50%, 50%. 2 million votes of 120 million votes is not so much. And if you look at red and blue, you know, we're pretty split country on a lot of issues. And so I would say for the winners, they have to be humble. And what losers have to do is they have to not be angry. If winners have to be not triumphant, losers have to not be angry, but they have to self-reflect. Mm-hmm. And I think the Republican Party really does have to self-reflect for the good of the country, not only for the good of the party. It's very, very, very bad for the country to have a party that can't get any minority votes, that can't get single women votes, that can't get gay and lesbian votes, a party that really a piece of it is really almost lunacy. Mm-hmm. Right? That's very bad for the country.
Yeah.
Especially since the country still, you know, 35% of Americans who walked out of the polls, walked out of the voting booths, claim they're conservative. Which means the country, you know, people feel that they're conservative and at the same time want more social tolerance, want more diversity. And I think that in some ways the people are healthier than the politicians. They are able to put together things that politicians don't. You can actually be conservative and be socially tolerant. You can be conservative and have conservative values and have a diverse population. And that putting together is actually what we need.
You know, Irwin, as you said that, I have felt deeply that a huge majority of Americans long for less divisiveness. I hear it over and over. There is a political reason to feed divisiveness, so the messaging that sets us one against the other isn't likely to go away. So how do we inoculate ourselves against those that we don't like and come together in spite of their positions on policy that contradict our positions on policy?
I mean, there's no shortcut for this. This takes practice by people. Politicians are not going to lead us on this. I mean, even with Obama's great speech, the chances of him going in there and actually being able to effect very significant compromise and nonpartisanship are very, very difficult. The real issue is, and it's going to take time, is whether people on the ground can begin to develop practices that evoke and nurture a new political imagination. And here's what I mean by a practice. We know that if you're a Republican right now, the right-wing media is leading the party. Okay, now, media can't lead a party. politicians have to lead their party. Mm-hmm. And we watched what happened. I'm not a Republican, but we watched what happened, that five or six major media people in the right-wing media developed actually the language that Mitt Romney was forced to use, which forced the party and forced Mitt Romney as the presidential candidate more and more to the right. And that was bad for the country. So we're going to have to say, you know what, we're not going to turn on this media. We're going to have media fasts on this. When we feel our anger being stoked, when we feel that kind of adrenaline rush of being right, 100% right, we have to be aware that that is actually toxic to the culture. And we have to turn it off. And if we don't turn it off and instead get off on it, then this will continue. This is not going to be led by politicians down. This is going to be led by people up.
Irwin, okay, I agree with you. I also know from experience that someone listening to this show who disagrees with you politically will say, well, it's very easy for you to say that because your candidate won and you got what you wanted and the rest of us feel like we got cheated. And so you're just saying that because...
Well, the truth is our candidate, we didn't win. And I think the Democrats need to be very careful about what it means to win. Right, the government is in the exact same place it was. We have a few more senators, but still not filibuster-proof. So we have a very, very split government, and some of the Congress people that got into on the House of Representatives are actually amongst the most right-wing Republicans. And so we won, but didn't win what we think we won. And if we're triumphant about that, that'll be a problem. And the winners always have to be more magnanimous than the losers. Now, the losers have another issue, and the Republican Party needs a fight between its center-right and its hard-right, and it needs to have that fight. But we can't have that fight for them. They have to have that fight, and really, it hopefully won't be a bloodbath, but it is a little bit of a civil war. Mm-hmm. It's very important to have hard-right and hard-left, but it's very important not to govern from hard-right and hard-left. Mm-hmm. Hard-left give pure positions that help people in the middle assess what to do. But you can't govern from that place. And what we have to do is we have to put the hard right back where it belongs, on the margins, on the edge, just like in many ways Obama did to the hard left. Mm-hmm. And many of us who were left of Obama were disappointed in parts of the presidency. But what we got was health care, in which an extra 30 million people at least got health care. We got a little bit of financial regulation. We got some insurance regulation. We got an auto bailout. We got the beginnings, at least, of some immigration talk with the DREAM Act. So part of what a center-right, center-left does is it holds its own sides, its own extreme accountable. My job is not to hold the hard right accountable. My job is to hold the hard left accountable so we can get things done in a political culture that calls for compromise.
So did you see anything in the Americans' vote that gave you signs of hope in this regard?
Yes, I'll give two things. One, I think that the fact that those Republican senators who were crazy, okay, it is. The things said about rape; they were out of control, and that in Republican states, Democratic senators got elected at the same time that Romney won the presidential vote. That means people split their ticket because they knew something was wrong. That's the beginning of the correction, right, of people's own party. So I think that was important. I also think it was very interesting that Obama got more religious vote than was expected. He got the Catholic vote, he got the Jewish vote, and he got, obviously, the liberal Protestant vote. The only vote he didn't get was the evangelical Protestant vote and the fundamentalist evangelical Protestant vote, and Romney got less of that, not probably because he was a Mormon, but still he got less of it. And what we've been talking about for the last 20 years is the more religious you are, the less likely you were to vote Democratic. And I think there's something about that that's going to be healthy, too, because we have too many splits in the country. It's not simply right-left, but on every social issue, it's right-left. On taxes, it's right-left. On spending, it's right-left. And on religion, it's right-left. So you have too many places where the split is very, very hard between the right and left. We need some mixing and blending there. So I think that was very hopeful. And finally, the last thing that's hopeful, I think that the Southern strategy is over. I mean, for the Republicans, and I understand maybe not for Karl Rove, but the Southern strategy of basically playing to the worst element of a white population to be able to get enough electoral votes is over, and that's good. That's going to force the Republican Party to think about how are they going to include Hispanics in that. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to say things like self-deportment anymore, and we'll begin to get some kind of immigration reform that'll be the right kind of immigration reform. And last, the next generation. I think that the next generation did vote, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Next generation, I mean people under 32, they did vote. And I think that for many of them, they're more pragmatic than ideological. They understand climate change is real, but they also know we have to have some market-based approaches. I think that they do understand that we need humane immigration reform, but they're not ideological one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
right? They know we need some social tolerance for gays and lesbians because they meet them in their families and in their workplaces. Places and in the army, and so they're past a lot of these debates, and that's going to be very healthy over the next, you know, decade or two.
Rabbi Erwin Kula is president of CLOW, the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership, a past recipient of the Interfaith Alliance Faith and Freedom Award. His books include Yearnings, Embracing the Sacred Messiness of Life. Erwin, as always, great thanks for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, read transcripts, sign up for our podcast. You can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices, and then you can listen to us anywhere, anytime. Please share your thoughts on what you've heard on Facebook and Twitter. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including the toll-free listener line, 800-856-0277. We encourage you to tell others about State of Belief Radio and encourage them to listen also. It seems to me it's time for some quiet conversations now, quiet conversations about very important issues. Tell them what you've been hearing on this show. Bring them into the conversation. Then maybe they will contribute to the national conversation as well. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, that State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, Welton.